Lafondre looking to get close side of Font. Lafondre away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Elm Park Royals. Day after a one-all draw against Hull City at the STL Stadium. And I am here with Jordan and EPR debutant to the Elm Park Royals podcast, I think, Matt. Jordan, how are we doing after yesterday?
I'm doing good. Doing good, thanks.
And Matt, first time on the podcast? Looking forward
to it? Not my first. I'll take it as a forgettable experience. It was the first time. It's my second, but it's all good.
Yesterday, I guess, at least, probably isn't that going to be that forgettable for Reading fans, I think, going forwards. There was quite a bit of controversy yesterday. First half, not so much. Fairly even start in the first half for both sides. And Matt, probably more fast start than recent matches for Reading, especially. We had a decent half chance from Carroll.
Yeah, I thought we started pretty well, really. I think having Carroll on the pitch starting games is a lot easier than starting with Puskás. It was really interesting just to see from kickoff, actually, we started straight on the front foot and actually started attacking. We've had probably 10 years of pass it back to someone in defence who will lump it up out onto the wing and hope someone will get it from kickoff. So it's really good just to start out with Swift just running towards the defence, really. I thought we opened really well in the first 5 to 10 minutes.
It was fairly even, I guess, Jordan, because Hull definitely had their chances as well. It didn't take long for them to have the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I actually thought both sides started pretty brightly. Hull definitely didn't look... they looked confident. They looked like a team that had come off the back of 4 wins, right? And definitely were giving us a good game. It's pretty even, pretty end-to-end. Nothing, no massive chances going at either end, but both teams, there's a bit of space for them, a bit of space to go attack. And like you say, they had the ball early in the back of the net. I was down the other end, so I didn't see it as offside the first time. Looking back at it, I think it is. But that sort of ball to the sort of back stick, whether it's from a set piece, which we've seen plenty of, or in open play, does seem to be a bit of an issue. They get the knockdown a bit too easy, and then it's a lovely, thankfully, offside finish from Wilkes. But that was a bit of a wake-up call. They didn't create huge amounts after that, but that was definitely a bit of a scare.
One thing we've got better at from the set pieces and from balls coming in, though, our zonal marking. At the start of the season, our zonal marking has been all over the place. And it's starting to get better. Even if Rahman gets beaten to the header and things like that, at least we're not just having a completely spare man at the back post who can just knock it in.
We'll definitely come on to zonal marking a little bit later on, because I think it's going to be a topic of debate, let's put it that way. But yeah, Rahman definitely gets beaten a little bit too easily for my liking for that offside goal. He's definitely getting targeted by teams at this point. That seems to be fairly clear, and it's probably not the best header of the ball we've ever seen. I think the quote which I would take from yesterday from one of the chats I had was, he looks like a winger who's playing left back almost sometimes.
I think low key he's had quite a poor month, to be honest. Now most of the time it hasn't really been, I guess, talked about too much or highlighted too much, because it tends to be we get away with it. Like, I don't know how many, obviously there was the goal at Sheffield United, but other than that, he hasn't been directly at fault for tons, but it feels like wingers and wingbacks are getting at him a lot over the last month. And I was sort of writing about this week. It's hard to know with a guy like him, whether it's about he's played a lot of minutes this season, he's not that used to playing a lot of minutes, stuff like that, or whether it's just, we've seen a bit more of him now. We get a bit more used to what he's good at and what he's not so good at. But and so do the opposition. But it does feel like in defence, certainly, he's not quite as assured as maybe we thought, maybe we'd hope. Still think he's plenty good enough to be like in the team. I don't think we should be talking about dropping him. But maybe a bit of a recurring theme with actually quite a lot of these guys who've come in, especially the more experienced ones, is there may be they've all been pretty good, but maybe we like this is why they're kind of see now.
Yeah, we can kind of see the reason that they're in the championship at this point.
Yeah.
There's definitely there's definitely shoots there, right? We can see why they're here and maybe not playing higher up. And I think you're right. I think there's definitely that elements of doubt in each of the players who've come in. We've seen just small bits, not necessarily like, as you say, not necessarily enough to fully criticize and drop them, but there's just some doubts there over, I mean, all of the players who've come in.
The big issue, we've got no one to drop him for anyway. So he remains in the team indefinitely.
That is a good point. Yeah, we don't quite have the squad to be able to drop him for another left back, because Paunovic hasn't really given Bristow much of a chance. I think Bristow might be injured, because I'm not sure he's playing for the under 23s either.
He's just come back. He's just come back, but he has been injured, yeah.
Maybe we'll see Bristow play next month in the FA Cup, potentially. Going back to the whole game, first big chance for Reading, 20 minutes in, John Swift, really good vision here from Swift to note the intercept or note the pass and claim an interception about, 5 yards into the whole half, Matt? And John Swift, he sets the chance up himself here. And
it's a great chance.
Should he score here?
Should he? Could he? Would he? I think he should score, but our expectations of Swift are so high from where he's been at this season that he doesn't score. I wouldn't, in years previously, I wouldn't have expected him to score all the time. I think it's just because he's got such a high goal scoring rate this season. He's been assisting so much this season, going through on goal. I'm expecting him to score this season. I'll give him benefit of a doubt. He got it on target. He made the keeper make the save. Didn't blow it wide, blow it over. Didn't take a bad touch going up to the keeper. He actually took a really good couple of touches putting it in front of him up to the keeper. So, he took a good chance. It didn't go in. Keeper made a good save. I think it's more on the keeper making a good save than it was Swift doing anything wrong.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Swift's expectation level is kind of on top, on top of the world still from fans because of how well he's playing this season. What did you think of Swift overall yesterday, Jordan? Because I guess it's difficult for him to keep that level of, we've been seeing these 9, 10 out of 10 performances from John Swift for a few months. Maybe over the last, 3 or 4 games, we've seen a couple of sixes, and that's not a bad thing necessarily that he's, putting in these performances which aren't 10 out of 10s, but perhaps we're just seeing, a little bit of a dip in form compared to the heady heights of August and September.
I think that's spot on. I think that expectation piece is key, really. But both are true, right? So, I think his performances have definitely slipped. Last few games, there's been a few bits where he's not really been that involved. But equally, the expectations are so sky high that when he drops a little bit, suddenly, like you say, his ratings are dropping to sixes and stuff like that, when in reality, he's probably still one of the better performing guys. I was chatting with someone about the player of the month stuff. And we were looking back and going, do you know what? If you actually look at the numbers and stuff like that, Johnson probably should have won player of the month because he scored and assisted 3 goals or something like that. And Luke Southwood obviously has been brilliant as well. But I do think we've all become a bit acclimatized to how good he's been this season. So that when he's not literally doing every single good thing on the pitch, we go, he's having a bit of an off day. But he did. And he was a little bit uninvolved at points, a little bit sloppy, maybe taking too many touches. I was sort of torn in the first half. I was frustrated that he wasn't close enough to Carroll, because there were definitely points where he would drift out sort of our left hand side and he'd do some nice bits of work with Tom and with Baba Rahman, but then you're looking up and Carroll's sort of all by himself. And in the second half it was actually almost the opposite, where we had a bit more of a struggle to actually bring the ball forward, and he was doing what I wanted him to do, which was stay right by Carroll. But at that point, Hull was so deep that it almost felt a bit pointless. So I felt a bit bad for him because a lot of the time, I don't think he's doing anything different, right? Swift has been trying to do the same things all season, right? And sometimes they come off. Most of the time, they come off. And yesterday, for whatever reason, you know, they didn't. You know, he probably should have scored. And the high standards we hold him to and he holds himself to, probably he'll have thought, yeah, I should have scored. You know, there were a few little nice little bits of interplay that, you know, he probably should have got. You know, I'm sure we'll get onto it, but he probably should have got a penalty as well. But you know what I mean? So, like, there's another day where he scores, assists a penalty, maybe even scores a penalty, and we go, it's not been a brilliant Swift performance, but again, we're talking about two goals. You know what I mean? That's the sort of fine lines that we're talking about.
And I mean, yeah, it's I guess one of the famous quotes is fine margins, right? If he gets the penalty and he scores yesterday, then we're talking about another brilliant Swift performance. As it happens, he doesn't, and we're talking about, oh well, Swift might have had a little bit of an off day. So yeah, fingers crossed for Swift over the next few weeks, because obviously if he's putting in those kind of performances where he's hitting the sevens, eights, nines out of tens, you know, we were always going to have a chance in games over the Christmas period. Hull had a really good chance. And I think this one is, it might get forgotten because of how poor the strike was. But Hull had a massive chance from a corner, Jordan, probably about 10 minutes before half time, which massively exposed as a set pieces again at the back post.
Yeah, definitely. And set pieces looked a worry all game, to be honest. And it's tricky to know, and I'm not the guy, maybe Stephen on Twitter is the guy to tell us all, but it's hard for me to say whether this was us being particularly poor or whether it was Hull being good. Because I know that the whole chap who was on EPR pre-match was talking about how, okay, they haven't scored from many set pieces this season, but last season they scored a ton and they're very, very good at them. And they did look good at them, but equally, you know, we know at times, you know, we're a team that can be got out of set pieces. But yeah, they looked a threat all game. What was a small positive, I guess, was that none of, like, the first contacts they were getting were directly on goal, right? Like, it was more nod downs and balls spilling to the edge of the box and stuff like that. So most of the chances were, for us at least, you know, acceptable sort of shots and distances that you'll go, all right, we don't want to concede those, but, like, I'll take a shot from a spilled corner on the edge of the box. The Wilkes one obviously was a lot better chance and you know, definitely should have done better with it. I do think one thing, I don't know, maybe I'm talking nonsense, but, you know, I think one thing to bear in mind was that, like, obviously, you know, they had three centre-backs. They got McGuinness, they got Wilkes, both, you know, those are five. Wilkes is not the biggest guy, but pretty physical. You know, those are decent targets, and
it's a team of lumps, isn't it, Jordan? Let's be honest.
There are certain setups you go, okay, like, even if you're really good at defending set pieces, like, they've got a chance just from sheer numbers, right? When you look at the Reading team, we're not a small team, but you've basically got two centre backs and Carroll as your real, you know, chief ball winners in the air there. We've already talked about Barbarama not being brilliant in the air, even though he's got a bit of height. And beyond that, you're talking about guys like Laurent and Drinkwater. Fine. We had some issues with Laurent start of the season in terms of, you know, defending posts and stuff. But there's sometimes you just get outnumbered in terms of the number of real targets that they have. And they had good delivery and they used it. So, you know, somebody else can take more of a deeper dive in the set piece to see if there's more worrying signs there. For now, I'll say hopefully it's just a one-off, because generally it's been a lot better. It's terrible at the start, but generally it's been a lot better of late, I felt.
And you said it at the, sorry, you said it at the start there, which was the first ball coming in, we do get to. And I generally trust that Holmes and Dan will get it. It's the second ball or it coming down into the box and there's no one else there taking charge and getting rid of the ball and clearing it out. But the chance we're talking about with the whole chance, I don't know how he skied it so high from 6 yards. It's incredible. That should have been a goal, 1-0 straight away.
It's a big chance for Hull. Like, that's probably the biggest chance of the half, I would say, for either side. It's a fairly, you know, fairly clear shot on goal. I guess Swift's chance was big as well. But thankfully didn't go in, and we come up towards half time, and we'll park the penalty discussion here, because I think we'll come onto that later on. But we end up winning a corner from a relatively kind of tame Josh Lawrence shot. Scott Dan flicks the ball onto the back post. Lawrence manages to nod it back across, and Matt, Tom Holmes, first goal for Reading. Talk us through it. Like,
what a first goal. That's incredible. I was half expecting it to be Carroll or something when I saw someone doing a bicy, but...
Well, so did Sky Sports and Opta Sports. I think they all reported it as Andy Carroll, and they took a little bit of time to realise that, yeah, it was a central defender who scored.
It's a striker's finish. It is a striker's finish, yeah. And I think it's such an awesome moment that boyhood club centre back gets his first goal at home in front of the fans, and it's a spicy. A minute before we go in for the break, you know, the only way you could write it is if it was a last minute winner sort of thing. He's taken it so well. And the good thing that he's done is he's got himself into the right position. It was actually a striker's position to get into, but he's got himself into the right position as soon as Lawrence, you can see Lawrence going to head it back across. I'm surprised there's no whole defender right on him, given that he is the centre back in the box. But yeah, he's taken it so well, and you can see how much it meant to him in his celebrations as well.
Yeah, his celebration in front of the stand was, yeah, joined by pretty much the whole side. I don't think Southwood ran the 95 yards to celebrate with him, but I imagine that might be purely because he didn't realise it was Tom Holmes who'd scored, given it was a bicycle kick. Yeah, Jordan, 54, 55 games, I think Tom Holmes has played now for Reading. So, how do you think Tom Holmes is, I guess, we've seen him in the side now for four or five games. How do you think he's performing overall? But I mean, do you think he's going to stay in the side long term?
I think it's a tricky one, that. I think it's a really tough one to answer. And I think it probably has a lot to do with how long Moore is out, because, yeah, okay, they're in different situations, but I was definitely of the opinion when Southwood basically first came in that, like, he needed to probably go and get 5-6 games before you'd even consider keeping him in. With Holmes, obviously, we've seen a lot more of him. We know who he is, what he's about. Whether he needs quite as long, I don't know. I think the drop in Moore thing is a delicate issue. Yeah, I personally think Moore gets probably more focus than he's due, but regardless, you know, Holmes is playing really good. I love that partnership. All I'll say, you know, whatever happens with Moore, I really, really like that Dan Holmes partnership. I think there's a lot of potential for it to really grow and become something really solid, because they're both. It's funny, I wouldn't say they even complement each other. I just think they're both quite similar. They're both super comfortable on the ball. They're both have some nice passes out, are happy to actually pass out of just a fullback or just the first defender, first midfielder, right? Like, we saw some really nice passes into people's feet, into space. Holmes actually was, I think this is a game that we'll look back on, and if you want to go make a little highlight reel of Tom Holmes, it's not a bad one for his passing, because you've got a couple of pings to the back stick for Carroll to try and hold up or knock down. You've got a couple of nice little rasps into, like, Swift's feet. And then you even had in the first half a lovely ball, which I haven't seen back. But he's picked the ball up deep and he's pinged it on the top for Swift running in behind, and we almost get something out of it. Maybe we work it for a cross or something. But if he can do that and he can be quite assured as he is defensively, which he generally is, you know, he's still got his weaknesses and can still be got at, but I think he's pretty solid still defensively, and he can nab a goal, which is long overdue, you know, we've got a very good defender on our hands, and just, you know, fingers crossed we get that contract sorted.
Yeah, the contract is definitely an issue. And disregarding Swift, because I feel like that one's an obvious one. We've got Holmes, Lauren, Remota, I don't know who else, Aziz potentially. There's a long list, right, of players out of contract this summer. Question for both of you. If you can only keep one, guaranteed to keep one player, who are you keeping out of his current squad, excluding John Swift? Because I feel like that's cheating.
Holmes, straight away. Without fail, there's no hesitation for me.
Jordan?
Yeah, it's Holmes for me probably as well. Although, all I will say with that is, like, it's Holmes for, like, the next 3-4 years in my mind. If we're talking just next season, it's probably Andy Yeardham. But, you know, if we're talking, like, who do you want to keep for the midterm, it's Holmes for sure, because, you know, such a good player.
He could be a player who we go are talking about in 5 years' time that's had, you know, 300 appearances or something like that for Reading, and is... I'm not going to talk one club players because you can never see that far into the future, but he could do a real job for 3, 4, 5 years into the future of Reading, and we really centre our back line on him. And, you know, the rest of the players I would love to keep, but I think he's got some real potential for the future.
Yeah, I do remember after the Forest game we had at home, there was a report from a... I don't think it was a Forest fan, but it was a report from a neutral who'd come to watch the game, who posted up about Holmes being a potential future England player. And I thought maybe that's a little much potentially, but certainly I could see him playing, you know, in the Premier League in the future quite comfortably. He's got all the talent, and
if Mings can get into the squad, then so can Holmes.
Yeah, certainly. Halftime came through. Andy Yeardham came off. Jordan, Andy Yeardham, it's a worry that he's come off again. Panovic has said it's a tissue injury, but they tried to take him off before any damage is done. We're not really sure as to what the like outcome is yet of him coming off. His injury concerns this season they're mounting up slightly.
I know he's been injured before, and we had that spell where he was out a little bit. I'll be honest, I can't remember how many games he's been out. But I think the bigger issue, in my mind at least, is less about his body holding up, and it's more just about the cover. You know what I mean? Maybe this will be a blessing in disguise. Maybe he'll be out BAFCON. Who knows? But I think similar to. I mean, speaking of AFCON, similar to Babarama on the other side, the bigger worry is just that we don't really have anybody else there. The fact that it's Tetek coming on, who I'm a big fan of, but I don't think he's a right back, is he? So I think there is an issue there. We're going to have to figure out what we're going to do, you know, if he is injured or if the two of our fullbacks do end up going off to AFCON. We're going to have some interesting team selections, some interesting couple of weeks. I think he's brilliant. You know, I think Andy Yeardham is a brilliant, brilliant player and has had a good season. And we do miss him when he's not there. So, you know, it's never good. It's never good seeing him come off. Fingers crossed it was done at the right time. It was done precautionary enough. I think I saw he's going for a scan. So, you know, fingers crossed the results on that aren't too bad.
Yeah, certainly. It was good to see them, I guess, take the precaution and do it early, hopefully. Hopefully it's early enough that there's no... You know, no serious injury, and he's back next weekend and starting. But Tetek comes on, and Matt, the goal for Hull comes about 10 minutes after half time. It's a long pass forwards from Smallwood in central defence. And I mean, Tetek gets extremely unfortunate that it kind of comes off his calf and bounces straight back to Malik Wilkes.
It's a really... I mean, unfortunate or fortunate, depends who you support, unfortunate goal to concede, really. And Tetek, I don't think he could have done much different. It hits him and goes off, out to 35 yards. 99 times out of 100, whoever takes a shot from there skies it wide in the championship. So I can't really blame Tetek for the goal. I don't think there's... We can argue if we're blaming Southwood or not. I think he's been great over the past since he's come into the squad. But it's a great shot. Southwood just doesn't quite read it right. goes down to get it. And I don't know if it bounces up before him, does it? Or is it he just jumps on top of it and lets it go through him? But you know, I think it's an error. Southwood wasn't at his best yesterday, but it's almost the same argument with Swift, which is he's been so good recently that when he's not at his best, we're like, oh, hold on. You know, you're not doing quite as well as you were previously. And I just think it's a really unlucky goal. And the rest of, you know, we didn't give Hull a lot of chances. I know they had, you know, a couple of offside goals and things like that. I'm not worried about those. It was, you know, 3 seconds after it being called for offside, they score, sort of thing. So, yeah, it's an unlucky goal that we won't see again for the rest of the season. And it's just unfortunate that it's cost us 2 points.
I think it's an interesting one about Hull not really creating much, because I kind of agree. I don't really think Hull had that many big chances, in all honesty, Jordan, despite the fact that, you know, despite the fact the game ended 1-1 and Hull, you know, did have two offside goals. It didn't really feel like they were that threatening potentially going forwards. I guess they didn't really create much.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought they were pretty impressive sort of up to the final third. Had some nice bits and pieces. But I mean, to be honest, a bit similar to us, I'm sure we'll get on to Carroll, but a bit similar to us, I think the strikers just weren't up to much on the day. You know, obviously Mallet Wilf scores his goal, takes the shot nicely. You know, it's a mistake from Southwood. You know, it's an error, it's cost us, but you know, it's fine. You know, these things happen when you're a keeper. But yeah, I think, you know, I'd be a little bit worried. I'm sure they'll be looking for a striker in January. I'd be a little bit worried if I was them continuing with those two, because they're both fine. But, you know, I think they missed that sort of cutting edge a little bit, the final third. And, you know, a bit like us to some degree, although I think we did create more, a bit reliant on a little bit of magic from, you know, Keane Lewis-Potter or Honeyman, both of who I thought were pretty good. Honeyman especially I thought was excellent. But, yeah, they just, everything was sort of little half chances. Everything was mainly from set pieces. So defensively, from my point of, from sort of what I take away from the game, not overly worried. I think we dealt with them fairly comfortably, albeit they played fairly well. So nothing massively concerning in the goal either, because, you know, I think Southwood will just take it on the chin and move on. So that's not too big of an issue. Or in the way we generally defended, you know, I think they got the better of us in midfield all game, which is a shame. But in that final third, we did what we've done plenty of this season, which is, you know, do enough to restrict them to not all that much.
And I think, yeah, the second half, Reading probably didn't have that many major chances. In reality, like we tried and we battled. We had a couple of half chances here and there. Carroll had two probable half chances, both of which he put over the bar. And we had, I think, Aziz with a reasonable effort from the right hand side. We won't go into those in too much detail because, you know, as much as it would be nice to, I feel like the major talking points from the second half are fairly obvious to most people who are listening, because Matt, the refereeing yesterday was god awful. I don't really think there's any other, like, you know, there's no other excuse for it, but yesterday was really, really poor. And really the debate is, should Reading have had two penalties or should Reading have had three penalties?
Yeah, I'm not usually one to just sit back and blame the ref, because I think it's always a really easy target. And every fan across the country can go, we didn't win today because of the ref. Realistically, though, yesterday we did not win because of the ref. At some absolutely shocking decisions. Even if we took out the penalties and we looked at just some easy decision-making that he could have done, that didn't really affect things, but like corners, throw-ins, that sort of thing. He always makes the easy decisions, go non-controversial, I don't know who it was, I'll just give it to the defending team. And he just had a very, very bad game yesterday. I think I was looking at his stats this morning. I don't think he's actually managed championship games that often. He's only just hit about, I think, 10 or 11 games in the championship. He's not a well-experienced championship ref. And yeah, yesterday was not his finest. I think every single one of those penalties could have been given. Every single one of those penalty claims could have been given quite easily.
Which one was the most obvious one, Matt? So we had Carroll in the first half, just before half time, which he kind of gets pushed to the ground, I would say. We'll go through them with Grant McCann's kind of excuse on the side. So the first one, Carroll falls to the ground, Grant McCann, it was a dive. The second one, Swift gets kind of laid out. It was outside the box from Grant McCann. And the third one, the handball, you've seen them given from Grant McCann. So which one for you, Matt, was the...
Saying it's outside the box, it's like, well, give the free kick then. Didn't even give that. I'd say the most obvious one for me was the handball. It's up in the air. It hits his hand. It's a handball. Everyone can see it. There's no... Should he have stayed up stronger? All that sort of stuff. It hit his hand in the penalty box. That's it.
Yeah, hard to disagree. They seemed to get more and more nailed on as they went, really. Like, I think the first one was, even watching it back, I'm like, as a biased Reading fan, I'm going, yeah, that's a penalty. But it's maybe a little bit more understandable. Swift one, for me, is so nailed on. It's unreal. It's just bad defending. And he just draws him in. It's a foul. And then the last one, like, you feel a little bit bad for the defender in terms of it might be one of those ones where you are, it's a bit unlucky, but it's still a nailed on pen. Like his arm's way where it shouldn't be, and it hits him and you just go, oh, unlucky mate, but that's a pen, obviously. So for none of them is frustrating. You know, when you're in the stands and stuff, like you never get that good a view of these sorts of things, but you can get a bit of a feel from like the players' reactions and stuff. And when you have three reactions like that, you tend to go, oh, I can't wait to see the highlights back, because I'm sure one or two of these is probably very, very clear. And you know, looking back this morning, they were. So it's it's difficult.
The fact that multiple Hull fans on Twitter yesterday were saying, yeah, Reading probably should have had three penalties today. It's very rare that you see an opposition fan coming out and saying that your opponent should have had three clear penalties.
And it's hard to separate the penalty stuff from assessing the performance either, because you know, I've seen plenty of Reading fans sort of going, oh, we shouldn't be relying on referees. You know, we should be able to beat Hull regardless or whatever. I sort of get that. But equally, like, the penalties have come from us doing things to get into good positions. You know what I mean? Like, if Swift doesn't get taken out, he gets a shot away. And given he missed one in the first half, with his track record, he probably scores it. You know what I mean? With Carroll's one, he's going for a nod down. That nod down might reach somebody, we take a shot and get a chance. You know what I mean? So, like, it's, I find it, I get what people are saying about you shouldn't have to rely on referees, but equally, we play this game to get into dangerous situations. And when you get fouled in dangerous situations, the reality is you get a penalty, or should do. So I also don't think we should just strip the penalties away when we're assessing the performance, because they're part and parcel of it.
Yeah, and from an overall performance perspective, I actually thought we were good enough to win the game from an overall performance perspective without the penalties. I think, you know, it's a couple of half chances that could have gone better. Swift going for on goal, obviously, could have been better. But yeah, strip away the penalties and we still could have won the game. I think it's a bit unfair to say, oh, we should be beating Hull there. They've won, what you said at the start, four games in a row. They're probably the form team in the championship. But I think we did enough yesterday without the penalties to win the game. And then you add the penalties back in as well, which are part of the performance, like you say. And yeah, we should have won.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's difficult, like you say, John, to strip the penalties away from the performance, because they are part of the performance. That is it, right? Like, it's all on the field. And three penalties yesterday, start of December, rings true to a game last year away at Sheffield Wednesday, and we should have had three penalties as well. So I'm going to mark my calendar for the first game of December next year and just make sure that, you know, that I don't put any kind of bet on for Reading to get a penalty. Next week, we are going to be playing away at the Hawthorns against West Brom. And Matt, West Brom away, in all honesty, it's not usually a good hunting ground for Reading. Do you see us picking up any points there?
I mean, on paper, we should go and lose, and it is what it is. We always seem to have this thing, though, of going away to the top of the league when we've not been playing very well recently and that sort of thing, and just managing to nick a point or nick an incredible away performance. So I'm hopeful. Realistic, though, if we go and lose 2-3-0 to West Brom, it is what it is. Are they top or still, or is Fulham top? We carry on. But Bournemouth might be top even.
And Jordan, do you give us much in the way of hope next week? I'm trying to find it here at the moment, but I think it's well over 15 or 20 years since Reading have won away at West Brom.
I think it's tricky. I've seen West Brom a couple of times this season because they're always picked for Sky, and I think they've always been really boring games. I can't say I've been that impressed with them. But equally, I think unlike a Swansea, unlike, you know, a Fulham, this is a game that I think even more so I'm less encouraged about us being able to turn up and sort of pull a win out of somewhere, just because, you know, I think stylistically they're pretty much the opposite of what our team, I think, wants to face in terms of tons of set pieces, tons of balls in the box, tons of just, you know, asking you to go defend and asking you to pick up pieces on the edge of the box and stuff. So I don't know what we'll do. I think, you know, Pano's got a lot of criticism for shaking things up and changing tactics and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised if we kind of feel like we have to, just with the threats they pose and the way they get just numbers in the box. Don't think they're the most cohesive or talented team. Talent is maybe the wrong word. They've obviously got tons of talent, but you know, the way they play. But you know, a bit like when we've played other teams that are very, very strong aerially and from set pieces, I always am a bit worried. So no, I don't give us much chance. But you know, as you know, Matt said, we do like to upset the odds at some of these games. So fingers crossed we can do something. But yeah, it might need a bit of Pauno pulling something out of a bag, I think, potentially.
Perhaps we'll just put Carroll at the back for the game and bring someone else up front.
Yeah. Well, three at the back, right? Carroll, Dan and Holmes. There we go.
It's a strong unit, that.
I'm sure we won't be conceding too much from set pieces if we do that. That's a joke. Before anybody worries too much about our zonal marking with Carroll at the back. So we'll be back next week with Matt Williamson hosting the preview podcast later on during the week. And then, yeah, join me next weekend for a review of the West Brom game, when hopefully we can finally pick up some points against West Brom away from home and Reading can continue their march up the table. We did move up one position yesterday. So, you know, it's not all end of the world stuff when you get a draw at home. Cheers, everyone.